2-2 pitch. Swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back. Gone.
All right. Welcome back to another week of the Cape Cod Pod. This is your host, Jeff Ponce. I'm with Peter Flaherty, as always. We are not together, unfortunately, this week. We are, unfortunately, not at Lowell Park. We are. You might be. I'm not. I'm back at home. Going to be shipping out to Florida for a few days to catch up some FCL action very shortly. So looking forward to that. But Peter, big week in the Cape. I was down there quite a bit myself. Got a couple games in. I'll get a game in tonight out here in Worcester, the Polar Park Cape Cod League Classic or whatever the heck they call that game. I will be live in attendance. So looking forward to that. You've been at games all week. Let's talk about it a little bit. Talk about the week that's gone on. Got some interesting sort of races, not for the playoffs any longer. That's all been clinched. We kind of knew what was going to happen here. Chatham and Wareham both eliminated. So it's kind of just a battle for first place at this point between Orleans and YD. There's what, four games to play at this point for all teams, correct?
And so there are three regular season games left. To kind of paint a picture for the standings, we've got, I'd say most importantly, there's really one battle at this point for first place, technically two, if you want to, you know, Hyannis mathematically is still in it to get first place if Gatuit were to lose out and Hyannis were to win out. But YD and Orleans is a particularly interesting race because YD is up 3 points or 1.5 games on Orleans with three to play. But they play each other tomorrow, Tuesday, August 1st, in a game that, I mean, I think more or less will decide who comes out on top in that division, or at the very least make Wednesday's game matter, which for most of these teams in the playoffs, really all of these teams in the playoffs, you're going to see a lot of wonkiness on Wednesday, which is the last regular season game before playoffs. You're going to see a lot of guys who haven't gotten a ton of ABs in there, pitchers who may have not gotten a ton of innings. Maybe even some position players on the mound. Guys want everyone as well rested as possible heading into the playoffs. So I'd say that's the biggest race right now. And kind of sticking in the East, Orleans is locked into that home field advantage slot, whether it's the first or second overall seed in the East. Same with YD. Harwich is kind of deadlocked into the three spot. And then Brewster in the four. And I know we sing Brewster's praises and Coach Shevchik's praises often on this podcast, but I know we caught them live last week, and they've lost some firepower in that lineup since we saw them, but that's still a really impressive team. And again, as I think we say weekly, Coach Shevchik and his team continually play their best baseball around this time of year. So that, yeah. I mean, YD or Orleans, they'll be on their heels and they won't take Brewster lightly. And then going down to the West, you have Gatuit at 55 in first with Hyannis at 50 or 2.5 games back in second. There are three games to play. So as I touched on earlier, it's a little bit of a long shot for the Harbor Hawks to finish in first. They still can do it. And then in third with 46 points and two games behind Hyannis is Falmouth. And Hyannis and Falmouth, it's really the similar, it's the exact same case as Gatuit. Hyannis owns the tiebreaker over Falmouth. So for the Commodores to somehow come in second and Hyannis to come in third, Falmouth would have to win out. Hyannis would have to lose out. And of course the two teams are playing tonight at Gov Fuller Field. And then in fourth and kind of locked into that spot are the Bourne Braves and arguably the most impressive lineup on the Cape. At least from what I've seen, you have guys like Derek Bender, Jonathan Vastine, Caden Bodine, Bryce Eblin, Nuke Contreras, who's heated up lately. They kind of roll 5 to 7 hitters deep per night. So really good lineup there. And these matchups are kind of starting to take shape, which is exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, you're looking at an East division that I think is still, once the playoffs come, very much up for grabs. Any of these teams could be any of these teams. And I think it's kind of the same in the West, but ticked up a notch because I think you can argue that three, maybe four of the best teams in the league might be out in the West division right now. It wouldn't shock anyone if Bourne gets hot for five or six games and ends up in the championship again, ends up maybe winning the championship again. I don't think that would shock anybody. They've been there before. They have a really talented squad, as you said, you know, have lost some tough games on the other side. You know, Falmouth has been, frankly, just hitting the crap out of the ball over the, you know, the last few weeks, continue to hit. You know, we saw what they did on Friday, but, you know, have continued to hit throughout the weekend. This is a team that I think, you know, kind of sort of spark plugged at the top of that lineup with, you know, Bizana. And then, of course, Turley, who's really turned it on over the last couple of weeks. And we've seen him play his best baseball, particularly at the plate. They can kind of cobble together some wins and outscore teams, you know. I think, you know, there's certainly some limitation with their pitching. But overall, that offense is as scary as anybody in the league. You know, Hyannis and Kituit, probably the two most well-rounded teams. So that's, you know, those West games, I think, are almost must watch, frankly. Probably the best a single division has been over the last 3 to 4 years in terms of this many really good teams that could potentially win and some intrigue in the playoffs. I think it's wide open, and I don't know if I felt that way last season necessarily. I don't know if you agree with that or not.
Yeah, without a doubt. I'd say in the East especially, I just from seeing these teams so much, if I were a betting man, I'd bet that Orleans or YD might come out on top. Maybe Harwich or Brewster's social team gets a hold of this if they make the finals and clips this. But in the West, though, I'm completely with you. I think that any of these four teams can make the playoffs. Falmouth and Bourne in particular would probably hit themselves there. And then, as you said, with Kituit and Hyannis, this year they're the two deepest teams that I've seen in the league, and they've shown it really all year long. Hyannis especially as of late. I know they've lost a couple in a row, but you can still say and make the argument that they're the hottest team in the league right now, maybe them and Falmouth. And as you mentioned with Falmouth, Bizana up at the top, who's really probably our personal favorite player in the league, and then also the 2024 draft class potentially. He had one of the best single game performances I've ever seen up here. The last time they played Kituit, he went 6-for-7 with 2 doubles, 2 home runs, 8 RBI. He was 4-for-5 against actual pitchers before a position player came in, but still extremely impressive nonetheless. One of the better offensive games I've ever seen a player have up here. And he's got to be the top pro prospect. I know that the scouts vote on it. They get an email sent or whatever, and they vote. I can't see how he's not voted top pro prospect on the season. He's sitting now 376 with 6 doubles, a pair of triples, 5 home runs, 29 RBIs in 30 games, more walks than strikeouts, and 14 stolen bases. I mean, that's as good as you can get in really anywhere, yeah. But especially on the Cape. Uber impressive. And then you mentioned with Turley, he's recorded a hit in 8 of his last 10 games with, I think, 5 or 6 being multiple hit efforts.
Yeah.
We saw some struggles early on with some swing and miss, and that's certainly still a part of his game, but the approach has improved as he's, you know, just gotten his eyes hot and gotten more comfortable up here. And he's showed off that kind of five tool upside that made him such a heralded prospect in high school. It's thunderous bat speed through the zone. He's gotten into his raw power, and he's super athletic and can really run, which I think are two things that play to his strength when he's manning the outfield, and he's got a really good arm. So those are two exciting guys. And, yeah. You know, kind of looking elsewhere, everyone's just retooling and bringing guys for playoffs. One player in particular, actually on Falmouth still, and he's a sleeper, is Michael Azee from Georgetown, shortstop.
Yes.
I thought he looked really good against Kituit on July 28th when they played. I mean, he had 2 home runs and drove in 6.
Yeah.
But I liked him over at shortstop. I thought the actions were pretty good. The arm, the arm played fine. He was comfortable coming in on the baseball. I think that's a guy that, you know, you can feel comfortable with hitting in the middle part of your lineup and manning short, which obviously in general is such an important position, but come playoff time, you want a shorthanded guy up the middle. And I think that he brings that to the table for the Commodores. So a really valuable late addition for Coach Trundy and company.
Yeah, an early addition and a returning addition, because he was beginning of the season. Really interesting player, tons of raw power, really loose athlete too. That's one of the things I thought was most impressive about him. One more thing I want to throw out there about Bizzana. You mentioned some of the multi-hit games for Turley. Bizzana has 6 consecutive multi-hit games. In 5 of those 6, he's reached base in 3 or more times. Over his last 8 games, he's got 7 multi-hit games and 6 games in which he's reached base 3 or more times. And over the weekend, obviously, they had that, you know, drubbing of Gatewit where they scored 27 runs. The following 2 nights, they win games, I think against Wareham and Bourne, and score 9 runs in each of those games as well. So the offense has really been ticked up to 11 for Falmouth thus far. So really, really interesting there. Something we wanted to talk about here, though, as we sort of get into the meat and potatoes here of the show, the home runs this season. Maybe not from an overall perspective, but certainly up at the top, we have 2 players with multi-home run summers for the first time, I believe, since 2012. And it's the first time anyone's had 10 or more home runs in a single season since Bobby Dalbec did it back in 2015. So we're talking about some stuff that's almost a decade old in terms of the last time somebody did it. And, you know, in terms of the 2 players with multi-home run seasons or summers, it's been over a decade. So the power is sort of back a little bit. This has been a theme in college baseball all throughout 2023. Do you think there's anything behind it? Or you think it's just more Cole Mathis is a special hitter and, you know, Hunter Hines has a ton of power and just happens to be in the perfect park that if you had 70 power, you could probably make this happen?
That's a good question. I mean, one to start, they're both extremely good hitters and worthy guys to be in this home run race. It's really fun to kind of have this as a side plot to follow these last 3 regular season games. And they're also in the race for the league lead in RBIs. Hines has 39, Mathis is 38. So Mathis is 1 behind in each statistical category. Home runs across the league, as you mentioned, are up. No team has hit more than 42 home runs in a single season since Chatham did so, I believe, in 2015 it was. I will double check now. Or maybe 2016, but regardless, it hasn't been done in quite some time. Gatewit has 41 with 3 games to play. And then across the league, 246 total home runs. I think it's just kind of the direction in which the game is headed in general. And kind of feeling some of these baseballs. Ironically enough, they're not the best baseballs. They're kind of soft and almost mushy. Like, they're not tomato cans, but they aren't like big league baseballs nowadays when you feel them and you're like, okay, like this thing is tight. It's going to be like hitting a golf ball.
The bounce on it is like, yeah, kind of funny. Like, yeah, for sure. Like, I feel like it's in some way, like you said, spongy, but like less springy.
Yeah, it's really weird, but no, I think it's just really just the way in which the college game is headed. I mean, we saw it this year, you know, all year at the Division I level and really at all levels with homers being up across the board. And some guys were using hot bats, and some of these yards are absolute launch pads. But down here, it's really like YD is kind of, for those listening familiar, it's like Maryland's ballpark in college, where it's really shallow and short dimensions all across the yard, most notably to dead center, which I think is 365 or so, give or take 10 to 15 feet. But Hines has shown off his raw power at all these fields. I think the most majestic one he hit this year was in Gatewit, turned on a fastball and hit it over the trees and right, which the trees aren't right over the field. They're probably 30 feet back from the bullpen, and he put it over. He cleared the trees fairly easily. So,
it's in the beach.
Yeah, I know. He hit it to Loop Beach. And then with Mathis, I know he's quickly turning into a personal cheese ball of yours, I think, and rightfully so.
Yes.
He had a great year at College of Charleston, but has really established himself in my mind as a top three or so round prospect with the Kettleers. He's hitting 322 with 9 doubles and 10 home runs. Easy backspin to all fields. Really explosive hands at the plate. And then on the mound, he was up to 96 the other night. His curveballs flash plus. I mean, he can do both. He's not just a thrower on the mound. He knows how to pitch. And I think he is a really, really interesting follow for the 2024 draft. And kind of thinking of how high he could go, there's an absolute chance he could go on day one for sure. But I think after this summer, he is firmly a top three round draft type of guy.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, the thing with Mathis that I think sets him apart from Hines and some of these other power hitters we've seen in the Cape in recent years, it's the barrel control. He's really short to the ball, but, you know, went out and like sort of hit like a low breaking ball the other day and kind of threw his bat out at it. And showed like some hitter traits that a lot of power hitters won't necessarily do that. And he's got sort of the raw strength and power in his hands and strong wrist to be able to sort of push stuff like that, you know, into the outfield. Not a lot of guys can do that, especially at that age. And, you know, I mean, he's not super fast and along those lines, but the fact that he's able to pitch, I do think there's some athleticism there. Certainly, you know, projects for more power, I think, even as he ages. So he's a really interesting player just because of that combination of feel the hit and, you know, barrel accuracy and power. So he's someone that's stuck out for me across a bunch of different looks. So yeah, absolutely. Is certainly one of my personal cheese balls. And the fact that he can pitch and be effective and throw strikes and get some strikeouts, I think is also impressive, though I don't necessarily think that's going to be a big part of who he is as a professional. I think you're probably going to go forward with a bat there. Let's take a quick break here, and then we're going to talk about some of the top performers over the last week in the Cape.
I took 2 years of Spanish in high school. I took 3 more quarters of Spanish in college. And here I am. I work at a baseball publication, a baseball website, where speaking Spanish would be incredibly useful for my job. And I found that I don't retain almost any of it. But now I've got a different way to do this, a better way, with Babbel. Recently, I've been learning to speak Spanish with Babbel, and you can too. Because with Babbel, you can start speaking a new language in just 3 weeks. It's the second best way to learn a language. The best way is through immersion, where you live where the language is spoken natively and everyone's using it every day. But that's not possible for everyone. It's not possible for me. So what's the second best way to learn a language? Babbel, because you can start speaking a new language in just 3 weeks. 1 in 5 Americans have learned a new language on their bucket list. I'm one of those 1 in 5. You can check it off this summer. Why Babbel? Because it works. Instead of paying hundreds of dollars for a private tutor or fooling yourself with language apps that are little more than games, Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are designed by over 150 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. One of the things I love about it is it gives you the language in a variety of ways. You see it visually, you hear it, but the one that I like the most is Babbel's advanced speech recognition tells you if you're saying the words properly. And if you're not, it helps you. And that's key for me. With Babbel, you can learn everything you need to have real-world conversations, from vocabulary words to culture, and all it takes is 10 minutes a day. So try Babbel. Here's our special limited-time deal for our listeners to get you started right now. Get 55% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our podcast listeners at babbel.com/BA. That's 55% off at babbel.com/BA. That's BABBEL.com/BA. Rules and restrictions may apply.
I love staying busy, especially during the summer, going to games, concerts, shows, whatever is happening in my area. But what I don't love is making plans ahead of time. So shopping for tickets just got a little bit easier with TickPick, the original no-fee ticket marketplace that brings you the best prices for all the events that you love. And now TickPick is partnering with Zip, so you can shop now and pay later. Zip allows you to shop at TickPick and split your payment into easy installments. Visit TickPick.com and use promo code ZIP20, ZIP20, for $20 off your first purchase of $199 or more with Zip. Zip can only be used for U.S. purchases, and Zip may charge a fee at checkout. Certain merchant, product, goods, and service restrictions apply. See Zip's terms of service at www.zip.co-us. Loans through the Zip app are originated by WebBank, except for Zip-originated loans in Colorado, Nevada, Massachusetts, and Maryland.
All right, and we are back. I think this is probably the part of the show where we'll wax poetic about Travis Manzana again for a minute. But over the last six games, so seven-game stretch here, he's 16 for 28 with 12 runs scored. He's top in hits. He's top in runs. Has three doubles in the week as well, which is, you know, good enough for second. Couple home runs like we talked about. And then from an RBI standpoint, nine RBIs. He's behind a couple of guys. Cole Mathis tied with his teammate Hurley. And then someone who kind of broke out this week for Kituit after joining on in late July. And that is Bucknell infielder Sean Keyes. Keyes had a big week too. Do you want to say anything about Manzana? We've already talked a ton about him. Or do you want to talk a little bit about Sean Keyes and the week that he had?
I was going to say, this is kind of the hot sheet preview segment, I guess, but
it kind of is a little bit. Yeah. It's got some overlap because of the 7-day period. So there's still three more days that we'll record in this hot sheet. So it could wipe away some of this, but these are the top performers over the last 7 days, and I think it's worthy to at least chat about them a little bit.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, I mean, just to kind of isolate the week that Bazana had, I know we talked about the individual game against Kituit and then the multi-hit efforts, but to kind of put it in perspective, as Jeff said, I mean, he's going racking up 16 hits across six games is an incredible feat up here. And then, I mean, he's also hitting for power. And he's gotten into his game power rather easily with three doubles, two home runs. He can drive the ball into either gap. The exit velocities across the board have been really, really impressive. We could go on and on about him. But a guy that broke out was, again, you touched upon it, was Sean Keyes. He went 12 for 26, three doubles, three home runs. Probably most notably were his 15 RBIs. Across his first seven games played. I mean, like, if you go to the league leaders in stats now, he's kind of right in the middle of the pack for RBI total of guys that are still here. He recorded a hit in each of his first six games, hit a home run in three of his first five, hit a grand slam in his second game against YD, and then followed it up with a Doran Park special, I guess you could say, down the right field line. So again, to kind of, for any listener that has not been there, it's a pretty big park, really, from left all down the left field line all the way around. And then right when you get to the right field line, the right field foul pole, it kind of juts in. And I think they listed it 300 down the line. And I mean, he hit a fly ball and off the bat, I mean, it had F9 written all over it. And then you're kind of watching, and it's like, is this going to stay fair? And then it literally just plops right over the fence, right in front of the foul pole for a not so deep home run. And then I'd say his most titanic and majestic blast was a couple of days ago against Hyannis. He got a slider and a two strike count. It hung up a little bit and the wind was blowing out, but he didn't need any of the wind. It was midway up the trees in right center. So He's been a huge help to that Kituit team in the last week, and the 15 RBI, no matter what he does in the next 3 days, I think that alone will probably get him on the hot sheet. And then, as you mentioned, Turley and Mathis are each having stellar weeks of their own. And then not to get lost is in the shuffle a bit with the, I guess, lack of power maybe, is John Gazdar at Hyannis, bat-to-ball specialist. He is a very low strikeout guy. No swing and miss. Swing decisions are really good. All this guy does is move the baseball and get on base. And he's got multiple hits in four of his last five games. And on the week, he's 11 for 19 with a double, five RBI. And he's played really good defense at shortstop. So kind of like a Z for Falmouth. Hyannis has their mid-major guy of their own with with Gazdar out of Austin Peay. He made a couple of plays a few days ago that I was really impressed with. He went deep in the hole, kind of made a Jeter-esque throw and a really good bid, and it was an infield single, but he almost nabbed an above-average runner in Trey Younger. So great week for Gazdar, and then kind of rounding it out, Grant Hussey and Kevin Keister for Wareham and Harwich, respectively. Also solid weeks. Hussey in particular with, you know, he's 11 for 23, 478, three doubles, two home runs, and eight RBI. And that the biggest swing was a grand slam a few days ago.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look at Hussey, he is a massive kid. He's every bit of 6'3", 225. I'd say it's strong six, borderline seven raw power, a little bit of swing and miss. Maybe a little bit of selling it short. There's some swing and miss to his game. But when he gets it, it really goes. And he's been getting it the last week, and it shows in his stats. So those are kind of the most notable hitters. And then the pitching now, like at this stage in the game, I don't even know if we were if that was the path we were going to get down, but the pitching it's kind of shoddy, I'd say at this stage in the game, but Finnegan Wall turned in a really good start for YD. YD's pitching has really stepped up lately, I think. And then some of these guys, I'd say
Fisher Jameson had a pretty good start on Monday. He'll go against you guys, I think, tonight, actually, sort of like a repeat. But went five innings. I mean, struck out nine, didn't walk anybody. Three hits, allowed one earned run, against obviously a powerful Kituit lineup on the road. Thought that was a pretty good start. Like, the stuff isn't insane. He gets a ton of hop in his fastball, but it's like 90 to 92, with a couple of breaking ball shapes and a changeup. So Jameson had a good start. The other guy I was going to ask you about, if I could, was Tristan Smith of Clemson. He's a 2024 eligible left-hander, South Carolina native. He had a pretty good start last week against Wareham. He faces off against them tonight in Worcester. So I'm actually going to see Tristan Smith for the first time. Any sort of insight there? I don't know if you saw him. I know he faced off against Kituit, had a pretty good start back in the 17th of July.
Yeah, I mean, that'll be a good get. He's definitely worth it. Athletic left-hander, kind of a relievery look when I saw him. He's up to 93, 94 in the first. It fell off a little bit. Sprayed the fastball in the first, especially kind of throughout the outing. The command was a little shoddy. He relies really, really heavily on his fastball. I think it's a pitch he throws 75 to 80% of the time. And then he supplements it with kind of a shorter slider that still needs some refining and retooling, but he'll get off a couple of above average sliders. And I think the key for him is just going to be the command and reducing traffic on the bases, because fastball's got a ton of carry through the zone. It plays really well, especially when it's elevated. He can pitch with his fastball, which I think is a key trait to both right and left-handed hitters. And then I think navigating this Wareham lineup, I think it's a friendly matchup for him. And I mean, we saw it on July 24th when he threw five no-hit innings. But I think that he knows what he's going to get. He's comfortable facing them. And as he's done all summer, and it's worked for him, is he's just going to rely on the heater and pitch with his fastball and say, here it is, try and hit it. And guys haven't been able to so far. And on the summer, two ERA in 18 innings, which is really impressive. And then 26 Ks to seven walks. So, I mean, and looking at the stats, it doesn't necessarily scream command issues, but in watching him pitch, now that I say this, he'll probably go out and shove five innings down my throat with no walks and nine punchies. But he'll get into deep counts. He'll have to dig himself out of some holes sometimes. But again, he is a true freshman and kind of figuring out the kinks. But in my look, I kind of saw really effective late inning power reliever. I'm interested to see what you think. And then circling back a little bit to Fisher Jameson, guy that didn't throw a bunch this year for Florida. And this summer has really blossomed in Brewster. and against Kituat. I think, as you mentioned, the fastball's got a lot of carry to it, but he hides the ball really well, throws from a tough, true, over-the-top north-south slot. And I think that what he lacks, I guess maybe in pure stuff, he makes more in both, I'd say, pitch sequencing, whoever the catcher was that day. I think it was Ike Irish.
Yeah.
He called a really good game. I don't know if Brewster calls their own games or not, but if they did, kudos to Ike Irish. But he also tunnels his offerings really well. At least that day, he tunneled them really well. I mean, the slider has a ton of late break to it. And yeah. I mean, it looks like a fastball for the first 55, 56 feet. And then he threw his changeup to both right and left-handed hitters. 6'5", 220. I'll get another look at him today. And on the summer, he's been, I mean, really, really respectable and probably at this point, I'd say one of, if not Brewster's best arm. 15 innings, 20 Ks to six walks, just 10 hits allowed. Hasn't allowed more than four hits in an outing since his opening appearance against Harwich. And then since then, the most he's allowed, it was three against Kituat on July 24th. But I mean, he dominated that Kituat team. They had no answer. Nine Ks was by far his most on the year. And I'm sure he's excited to get him again. So I don't know how much he'll pitch today as guys try and line pitchers up for the playoffs. So, I mean, we'll see about that. If you go maybe three innings or one trip through the order, 50 pitches, whatever it might be. But he's had himself a summer.
For sure. The last guy I wanted to ask you about, haven't seen this guy, but had big start against Orleans on the 24th, went six shutout innings, allowed six hits, struck out seven with no walks. That's Jason Doktorczyk from Nevada. 6'6 righty. I think he pitched against Kituat on the 2nd of July, actually.
Yeah, Doktorczyk.
Is that what it is, Doktorczyk?
That's how I say it. Again, I could be wrong. But he's got a really interesting path. He was a JUCO guy, went to Nevada. He had a really good start to his year and then, you know, maybe got hit around, but I mean, he was always a strike thrower up to 95 with a slider that kind of, you know, had a ton of sweeping action, was above average. And then kind of his coming out party was his start against Orleans, his first and only start so far this summer with the six shutout innings and seven Ks. He's been up to 93, 94 this summer. Again, that slider went on as above average. Nothing is straight with him. It's got some natural arm side run and sink. And the changeup also plays well off his fastball. And he's had a great summer for Coach Pickler. 2.9 ERA, 24 Ks and 24 and two thirds with 10 walks. And I think that he's going to be an arm that they rely pretty heavily on as we head into the postseason.
Yeah, for sure. Another interesting sort of player there popping up a little late. So I guess all is not lost with the arms. And the pitching, though it's been obviously a down year for pitching overall. But yeah, I think that kind of wraps it up nicely. I think our plan is to do maybe a preview of the playoffs on Thursday. So we'll have another Cape Cod pod for you this week. And then the final sort of full regular season hot sheet will be out on Thursday as well. Catching all the games. We kind of timed it perfectly when we made the switch to Thursdays, because that way we'll catch all the final games here as we go through some of the top players in the league over the last week. So then it will be time to rank out our top 50 and write up reports and do all that fun stuff. But been a pretty good summer. I'm hoping to get at least another game or two when I get back, maybe a semifinal game and some championship action. So it's winding down for me, you know, just a handful of games, maybe more for you, you know, maybe 8, 9, right, at max. But let's see how it goes. Should be a good couple of weeks, good playoff series, strong end of the season. We'll see if Kituat is able to surpass 2016 Chatham's home run record. But for Jeff Ponce, for Peter Flaherty, this has been the Cape Cod Pod. Thanks for tuning in.